the due process of the occupying state. They're not entitled to get access to Israeli courts. And as we've seen for years now, even those Israelis going through the Israeli court system are denied any real modicum of justice, due process, and equal protection with a system of government in which the Knesset can largely overrule what the court system wants to do. So what they've done is they've established this military system. It's staffed by military judges, by military security people out of uniform, are not civilians. Israeli police out of uniform are not civilians. Settlers that are carrying weapons are not civilians. Settler outposts that have heavy-duty weapons is not a civilian outpost. So there's that whole definition. But clearly, children, the elderly, the infirm are civilian under international law and should not be removed. But the problem that we have here is not knowing who did what, when, where, why, or how. That's with just competing narratives. But when we talk about competing narratives, there's no debate over what's going on in Gaza. There's no debate what's been going on in Palestine for 75, 80, 85 years, even before the United Nations crafted Israel's response to that is, Israel, proved your case. The International Criminal Court ruled in 2021 that it has jurisdiction not just over Palestine because it's a signatory to the Rome Statute.
Well, I can't believe we're still watching this murder take place on a daily basis. What can be done to stop this genocide immediately, in your perspective?
The ICC has enough probable cause and has enough evidence to issue arrest warrants for Netanyahu and a dozen of his top advisors. That immediately limits their ability to travel. That immediately sends a message to people that want to come there to meet with them, conspire with them. That raises the accountability and the concern, because that really sends the message, okay, you are a suspected criminal. There is an arrest warrant for you. We're going to file it with Interpol. There is some standing for the notion that assets can be frozen, which Iran is well versed in, although it's been used not legally against Iran over the years, but as a political weapon. Assets can be frozen. Organizations, private entities that are now providing money, that are now providing weapons, that are now providing technical support to the Israeli government are on notice that you are, if you continue, you may yourselves be involved in criminal wrongdoing. The General Assembly can ask the ICJ for an immediate recommendation. There is universal jurisdiction in many countries in this world. Claims can be brought. They've been started already in South Africa, which is similar to the ICC to the extent that they have the power to issue arrest warrants based upon probable cause. Red notices are set with Interpol. In states themselves, for example, in the United States, there can be an effort. There should be lobbying and political effort to impose the Arms Export Control Act, which would freeze funding and weapons for Israel. There are domestic jurisdiction issues where if I'm a Palestinian and I have Palestinian-American or Palestinian who happens to be in the United States right now, who has family, businesses, homes, etc., that have been destroyed, who have been executed, that have been victimized by war crimes, they can attempt to bring domestic actions in domestic courts under U.S. law. There's an issue of what's called extraterritoriality, which has to do with the ability of U.S. courts to reach out for activity and conduct overseas directed at U.S. But keep in mind, the U.S. has had more than a few examples over the years of Palestinian American citizens, including famed journalists, that have been executed by Israel. And the Department of Justice has done nothing in the United States. So again, there's that double standard. So there is an ability to move the ICC to bring an advisory opinion action, the International Court of Jurisdiction of Justice, for universal jurisdictions to file arrest warrants for Netanyahu and other leaders of the military, to begin to identify businesses. And we know there have been lawsuits in the United States that have gone after tax-exempt organizations that provide money illegally, that are tax-exempt to so-called settlements in the occupied West Bank and the Palestinian territories. So there is a combination of actions which can be brought domestically and internationally, which can be saying to Israel, enough. But at this point, there have been 20,000 Palestinians who have lost their lives, almost all of them civilians, 60% of them children. 75% of Gaza is in ruins. 1.5 million people have been displaced. No food, no water, no electricity, no medical attention. Who knows what viruses and illnesses and plagues are going to befall. But again, this is not inadvertent. This is a determined effort, a designed plan that Israel has been waiting to unleash, and it has.
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable, mind-boggling what is taking place and how everyone is watching it. I mean, based on this international rules-based community that exists right now, do you think that this same community then will actually play a role in stopping this genocide?
I'm not waiting for the world community to all of a sudden grow principle of justice and independence and to move on behalf of a targeted people. If for that, you know, we will be generations away. But I am optimistic that the combination of movement at the ICC, movement at universal jurisdictions, but most important, millions of young, largely young women and men worldwide in the streets, demonstrating, the BDS movement expanding, Israeli military factories and plants that are providing information being demonstrated against, civil disobedience there. There have been acts of criminal mischief as well. So I think this combination, and keep in mind, I'm not naive. I don't believe that Biden or the West or anyone is going to step in until after Israel has been able to accomplish the next step of its never-ending Nakba that it's designed to do. But I think they're reaching, and they're not going to step in out of principle or out of purpose or out of passion or out of love or out of humanity. But it's going to reach a point where politically it's boomeranging back against them, and that's when they're going to step in. But meanwhile, the fact that Netanyahu has been given a green light, I mean, now he's invading the South. They displaced 1.5 million people in the north and the center of Gaza and sent them down basically to the south. And now the tanks are rolling into the south and there's no defense. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinian civilians again being slaughtered every day. There are variables, and I'm not suggesting or proposing that Hezbollah or Syria or anyone else continue their involvement or expand it, but that's an issue. Using the old anecdote, the colloquialism, the 800-pound gorilla in the China shop, there's increasing tension and fighting going on with Hezbollah in the north. Syria is pushing back again. I suspect the West Bank is going to explode. The real issue is I think there's going to come a point in time. Let us not forget, this is as much about Netanyahu trying to save himself from a judicial process that he's under indictment, I believe, in 2 or 3 cases, and the trials are beginning again. In Netanyahu's mind, as long as he can say, we're at war, we're at war, we're at war, we're at war, he's safe. In the minds of the Kahanists that now run the military, the industrial military complex, the security state, as long as they get to say, see what they did to us, us, they're allowed to expand, they're allowed to justify increasing violence, expansion of so-called settlements. I don't know how it's going to play out at this point.
Right.
But one thing is for sure, that resolution, meanwhile, is thousands of Palestinian lives are being lost to the lust, the political lust, not just of Israel, but the proxy masters of the West that have been involved in this situation. And it's not just the West. I look at UAE, I look at Bahrain, I look at Saudi Arabia, I look at Morocco, I look at other Arab states or Gulf states that have been complicit throughout. I look at the fact that we had to beg Egypt to open Rafah even periodically for goods and services to come in. And meanwhile says, yes, we'll let Rafah should be open so that we can displace 1 million Palestinians. Egypt, you deal. Push them off into the Sinai. Let's send the Bedouin back to the desert. So we have complicity among certain states in the region. And then we have other states that have long supported Palestine. Iran is one. Doha, Qatar has been there. Algeria has been there. South Africa and African states have been there. So we've got this tension that's underway right now, and I'd like to be able to predict with some modicum of certainty how it's going to end up, but I really can't at this point.
Well, Stanley, I'd like to hear your final comments about the overall situation.
Is very clear on what's going on in Palestine. I think the world community, especially the young women and men of the world community, need to stay in the streets, need to demonstrate, need to engage in all sorts of activities against governments, need to make sure that the political leadership understand there's a price to pay for their blind, obedient support for Israeli genocide. I send my love and solidarity to the Palestinian people. They know they are loved. They know they have support. We will fight with them. We will work with them. We will struggle with them. We will never forget we are family.
Stanley Cohen, it's been a pleasure having you right here on Hidden Files. I'd like to welcome my colleague, Maryam Azadcher, to Hidden Files. She's going to bring us a little bit more information about other situations taking place since October the 7th. Well, Maryam, welcome to the Hidden Files team. It's a pleasure having you on board.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being part of this team.
Well, I'd like to look at, because outside of the Palestinian territories, there were other situations taking place that has had a big effect. Tell us about that.
Yes, of course. So now what happened is that in bombing Gaza indiscriminately, the Israeli regime didn't just destroy Palestinian homes, schools, and hospitals. It also destroyed the widely believed myth that the international law was created to defend the rights of oppressed nations, and therefore there's no need for armed resistance. Now, today, this law has no real legitimacy and power in the eyes of millions who have seen Palestinian parents pull out the bodies of their children from under the rubble in the deafening silence of the so-called international community.
It's often said that one man's terrorist is another's freedom fighter. Well, in this case, one colonialist terrorist is a nation's resistance fighter, and this has held true throughout history, where indigenous peoples, like Palestinians, were invaded using lethal weapons, stripped of their lands, using legal weapons and documents, and portrayed as the perpetrators of using the weapon of media. But there's one thing these powers cannot win without your consent. And that is the control of your mind. So next time they ask you to condemn those fighting against colonial interests, maybe let them know that you have read their history. Goodbye for me, Marzia Hashemi, and from the whole crew right here in the studio.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Since we are in the month of Ramadan, the blessed month, which is in fact granting us a lot of blessings, inshallah, by God, Let me actually start our episode with this question, Sheikh, with i'tikaf, because some people might actually like to do i'tikaf, you know, in every month, especially in this special month. Would you talk a little bit about this issue and this concept, and is there any recommendation for this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, the concept of i'tikaf is something very few people know about. There are many people who do not have a proper understanding of the rules and conditions of i'tikaf and how it should be observed. So I would like to shed light on some aspects of i'tikaf. Probably there will be some more details. First of all, i'tikaf should be observed in the central mosque of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the central mosque is the mosque which is lit, in Arabic terminology called Masjid Jami'.
Okay? Right.
So every city or township has a central mosque where people in large numbers usually turn up. They pray and they offer, they perform their rituals in that mosque. So when it comes to the local mosque, of course, it's not valid to perform i'tikaf in your in the mosque which is in your image, in your neighborhood. For example, everyone has mosques in their neighborhood, so you cannot observe i'tikaf there unless it is considered to be a very important and, for example, central mosque. There could be many central mosques in a city, for example, depending on how, depending on the number of people coming to that mosque. So this is one point. Many people ask, because of a lack of knowledge, people ask whether they are allowed to observe i'tikaf in their own homes.
Right.
Of course, it's not permissible.
Right.
I'tikaf is a is a recommended act. Of course, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family observed i'tikaf during the last 10 days of Ramadan, and of course during the month of Rajab, and it's so rewarding, and there is tremendous reward in observing i'tikaf. The thing is that once you start observing i'tikaf, then in the beginning it is mustahab, but when it is this third day you are going to start, then i'tikaf becomes obligatory. Mm-hmm. You cannot skip it. You cannot avoid it.
Should it be actually in 3 days or more than?
Of course, it depends. Of course, it can be observed for 10 days of the month of Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
It can be the minimum period of i'tikaf is 3 days.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And the third day is obligatory.
Yeah, it becomes obligatory. And when you observe i'tikaf, it is necessary also to observe fast.
Right.
To observe fast. And there are some strict conditions. For example, exclude yourself inside the mosque, then you are not going to leave the mosque. You are not going to get out of the mosque premises.
Right.
In some few cases, of course, there are you are allowed to leave.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Ya Allah, thank you for another chance standing at my door. Ya Allah, you've given me hope. Deliver this gift right to my home. مرحب مرحب يا رمضان أحيي قلوبنا بالقرآن حل ليالنا بالقيام أهلا أهلا بالصيام.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of God, the blessed month of Ramadan with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, you were talking about itikaf, and before the break you mentioned that there are a few cases that makes it possible for the person who's observing itikaf actually to leave the mosque, the central mosque, right?
Yes.
Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. For example, it's very when it's very urgent, you have a kid at home, and he is he needs to be taken to a doctor,
right?
Or for example, you want to tend to someone who is in bed, or very quickly, and then come back. Maybe even I read in a book that even if you want to bid farewell to someone who is a close relative, like your parents want to, for example,
leave town,
go on a Hajj pilgrimage, and you want to take them to drop them at the airport. Some exceptions. These are some of the exceptions. But and if it's not very urgent, it's the urgency of something is actually is judged by the common view, the custom. If it's not deemed necessary, it's not permissible to step out of the mosque area. And then, so of course, there are some important things, like, for example, if you want to go to the washroom, or maybe perform the ritual bathing.
Yes,
these are things you are allowed.
So if the urgency has been met, I mean, after the urgency, after you have left the mosque area and then you got your job done and then you're back to the mosque area again.
Yes.
So should you actually continue your itikaf whatever days you have passed, or no, you have to start it all over again?
No, itikaf means you started on a specific day and finish it on a specific day. For example, during the month of Rajab, there are 3 days which coincide with the birthday of the Commander of Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. So you cannot do it on the 20th of Rajab or on the 25th. So you have to, of course, if you want to observe itikaf on any occasion, if you want to do so, there's no objection, there's no problem. Okay, if you want to fix a few days for observing itikaf, for example, if you make a vow that you will observe itikaf from the 10th of Ramadan until the 13th of Ramadan, it's a vow, okay? It's something else. You can observe it and there would be no problem.
And, during the month of Ramadan, so everybody's fasting, if they are able to, if there aren't any, conditions which make it difficult for the person who's doing the itikaf actually to fast. Well, we know that. But what about the other months?
Of course,
they are observing itikaf, should they be fasting?
Yeah,
too?
They should be fasting. Fasting is necessary.
But from the third day onward?
No.
All
the 3 days.
All the
fasting
3 days.
Fasting begins from the first day. Okay, you should observe fasting from the very first day, from the onset.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Thank you. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and the blessed month of Ramadan. with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, what are the things which are recommended or even obligatory for a person whose intention is actually to observe i'tikaf? So what are those things that they should do?
Okay. When you isolate yourself in the central mosque, it is what is necessary is to sit in the mosque and just sit in a mosque. And of course, even if you do not do anything, i'tikaf means that you isolate yourself from the worldly glamours, from worldly attractions, and you just and sit inside the mosque and you break off with everything else. So, but this is the wajib part. This is what necessary. You sit in the mosque and that's it. But when it comes to certain a'mal, certain practices, of course, the a'mal are too many. For example, you can recite the Holy Quran, which is very good to recite. And of course, there is tremendous reward in reciting the Holy Quran. And there are special du'as, supplications, which are mentioned in the book of Islam, in the book of Mafatih al-Jannah. Okay, the book of Mafatih al-Jannah, I would like to tell to our audience that it is replete with important supplications, very useful supplications, which can be read and recited on different occasions. If, for example, an individual is in search of a du'a or a special supplication, they can find it in the in Mafatih al-Jannah, which is a book that was composed by Sheikh Abbas Qummi. So it is a very important book, and of course there are special supplications which can be recited during i'tikaf. Now, if a person does not engage in du'a, for example, supplication, that's all. That's okay. No problem. He is not there is no objection to him, because it's not necessary to engage in praying, worshiping, and of course reciting du'a from morning till night. And because it's, you will get tired, so you can, for example, drink tea, you can eat your meal, and then also you can engage in a discussion with your friend. For example, if you are not alone in the central mosque, there are maybe hundreds of other people. So if you want to engage in a debate, for example, about a certain issue, like if you have your book, the Holy Quran or any other book, you want to discuss it with your friend, that's okay. For example, you can give 1 hour of your time discussing a book on Islamic jurisprudence, a book on Islamic, for example, beliefs and theology and many, many.
Could they discuss something else, like outside of the religious, for example, topics?
That's discouraged, because what you are supposed to do is detach yourself from. Of course, sometimes you might happen talking about politics. But of course, politics is not something, it's not taboo, it's not forbidden. You can talk about the developments taking place in the region. That's all right.
What about the studies, like scientific studies? A student, in fact, wants to study also as well as doing i'tikaf.
So, yeah, of course, you can take your laptop into the mosque start doing, for example, your studies for a few minutes or few hours, and then start engaging yourself in du'a and supplications.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, actually, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to deal with some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and the month of Ramadan. And in this particular episode, we talked about i'tikaf too. Thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh Allah, please unite us and guide us to paradise. Oh, and guide us to paradise. Ramadan is here. Allah's mercy is near. Time to give, time to share, time to show we care. 'Cause Ramadan is here. Ramadan is here. Allah's mercy.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
به پیغمبر میگم من شاهد سه چیز هستم اما تعملون نمیگه تعملو.
In Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, we read, You do not engage in any work, neither do you recite any part of the Quran, nor do you perform any deed, without our being witness over you when you are engaged therein. Allah in this ayah is the witness to three important deeds. One is all the good deeds that all the people do. The other is the deeds and performances that the Prophet of Allah does. And another one is the recitation of the Holy Quran. This means that the recitation of the Holy Quran is equal to all the good deeds of Prophet Muhammad and all the people around the world during all times. This point, which is also mentioned in Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, shows the significance of reciting the ayahs of the Holy Quran. Therefore, all the good deeds of the Prophet Muhammad and the other people of the world are in one scale, and the recitation of the Holy Quran is in another scale. Thus, we must try to recite the Holy Quran as much as possible during the holy month of Ramadan. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page.
We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Hajja Fatima was born in 1948. This was the year Palestinians refer to as Al-Nakba, the catastrophe, when Israel wiped the Palestinian inhabitants from 400 villages. Some they entirely destroyed. Others were repopulated with Jewish immigrants. Hajja Fatima was born in a field while her father fought in the war. Within days of her birth, her family fled to Beit Anan in the West Bank, which is where she has remained her entire life.
First of all, this is my land and my country. It is not only the 1948 or 1967 borders from the sea to the river, 27,000 square kilometers. I am not ready to let go of a centimeter. This is historical Palestine.
Al-Quds.
Jerusalem, the most important one, the capital. This is Bab al-Shams and this is Bab al-Karama. The Jordan Valley has been conquered and taken over by the Israelis. Here is Jenin. We will never let go of this area. And north is the Galilee, now ruled by Israel. My mother brought me into this world on the 14th of July 1948, the day of the Nakba. I was born in a field and left for 24 hours while my father fought in the war. I now fight with my words. Although this is my only weapon, I'm strong because I'm right.
Since her exile, Hajja Fatima has witnessed dramatic changes in the landscape surrounding her home. From the construction of the Israeli wall, which eventually encircled her home, to the gradual building of Israeli settlements, which engulfed what was once Palestinian agricultural land. Her town was once considered the safest path to walk to the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
The last time I visited Jerusalem, Al-Quds was 7 years ago. But it is now forbidden by the Israelis. They forbid me from everything that I hold dear to me, praying in Al-Aqsa Mosque, buying sweet cakes from the old markets of Jerusalem, and walking through the ancient path of the old city. There is no place more beautiful than Jerusalem. I would love to be there just to see the markets, the shops, the old streets, and to pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque. Bab al-Karama was built because it is the western entrance for Jerusalem. It is near Jerusalem, and this is why we built this village and named it Karama. It means our pride.
How did Fatima describe the land to me, stating, "The land is our bed and the blankets our sky"? Palestine to Haji Fatima is not exclusively about the land itself, but the Palestinians' relationship to their land. She told me that people can and will continue to live from the land, and only when their livelihood is taken, that will be the end of Palestine. Fatima sews each village and city into the map of Palestine, without borders, without boundaries, without settlements, without Israeli cities, and without the infamous wall built by Israel to separate what is now called Israel to the West Bank.
We want peace and they want peace. Our weapons is the rock and words. But we are rightful people. This is our land. Our ancestors are from here. Since 1968 they have been excavating tunnels, found a trace of evidence or antiquities. All of these antiquities are Arab, Muslim, Christian. We and our fellow Christians live together here. Jerusalem has the Church of Holy Sepulchre and it has Al-Aqsa Mosque. Whoever they want to imprison, let them imprison. Who they want to kill, let them kill. If they want to take a tree, we will plant 1,000. They break and we build. We are here for a long time. We are never going to be bored. They asked me, why do you see Palestine like this? This is my country, and I can draw it as I want and make it more beautiful.
Fatima joined Palestinian and international activists from around the world in building the protest village Bab el-Karama.
They didn't leave their land or houses and therefore they became refugees in their own homeland. Jerusalem is near, only a few meters from here, so we consider Beit Iksa to be the western gate for Jerusalem. If they take this village, we wouldn't be able to reach Jerusalem. But Jerusalem is our capital, the capital of the Palestinian state. Whether they like it or not, it's ours and not theirs. We are here today because they are going to take this land to build the wall through it, and we do not approve that. It is the land of our fathers and grandfathers, and also the land of our sons and grandchildren.
About 1,200 hectares from Beit Iksa land, and it just leaves about 2,000 hectares for the city, for the village itself. This is what had happened, and this is what they are looking to do it. The train that passes from near here in this neighborhood was passed from the lands of Beit Iksa, and the Israelis want to keep the citizens here far away from the pass of the train and the wall. That's why they separate the land.
Well, I was at the Bab el-Sham's protest last week, and I myself had my head banged against a bus by a soldier. The bus I was put on to be taken away from Bab el-Sham's, there was a man with he had a busted eye and a bleeding nose, and the soldiers would not let him receive medical attention.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Maliki Yawmiddin.
In this day, Al-Jum'ah, they pray here in their land because they know keeping their land is part of their religious and beliefs. For though here in Beit Iksa, the village that was surrounded by the wall from the whole parts, from the whole directions, only one path. This path is come and go through the gate that is run by the Israeli soldiers. If you want to enter, you have to give them your ID and tell them why and when you are come to enter Beit Iksal. This is the exact separation. Beit Iksal is living in a big jail here.
It's very clear that the settlements and the theft of land are illegal. The UN has repeatedly condemned it. Members of Amnesty International and other human rights organisations, they've all condemned it. It's just every attempt made to fix the situation is blocked by the US.
Ed Knight described to me that he barely sees the situation on the ground in the news, including settlements, construction and Israeli apartheid.
I think since the experience of the initiative of Bab al-Shams, it has been exposed the Israeli settlements much more and the Israeli confiscation of the land much more. It became have lots of interest in, within the international media, international community. And I think this is what we are doing now. If you continue this kind of initiative, they will challenge them more and more. And they will bring it from like in a kind of a media coverage to political levels. And that's what we want. We want everybody to be accountable and responsible for this. Because Israel is here, like any, for, by the support of Europe, by the support of the United States. Like, here you, they are accountable, as Israel is accountable for what's going on.
The villagers assembled for prayers on the hill. Following this, they erected a tent structure and laid the first bricks for a new mosque they call Kurama, meaning dignity.
You know, Beit Iksal's land is confiscated, like, and now I have no land whatsoever. This is the last piece of land that has been confiscated, which is 450 dirhams. So the strategy here is to come and to build the tents, as you see here, and to stay in the land. So people is living, staying here, sleeping here, staying 24 hours in this land, telling the Israelis one message, the Israeli occupation. This is our land, we are not going to give it easy. You can give orders of, like, any confiscations, you can give orders of expulsion, but we are going to defend our land. We are going to stay in our land. And this is an open battle, you know, with the Israeli occupation power. So we have no choice but to resist.
This is very symbolic because back in 1948, when the state of Israel was established, the villagers here had 15,000 dulums of land. Right away, 14,000 of those 15 were taken away. And recently, they're trying to take away another 700 of the, so basically they're going to be left with 300 dulums. The village here needs more than that to survive. They have a lot of land that they need to grow food and survive on that. So the Zionist plan is to basically build a wall around the village and between the village and their lands so they can't grow, they can't use it for agriculture to sustain themselves.
Even with immense international support, Israel handed the activists a notice of demolition. They destroyed the mosque and ordered all people to leave the area.
We've been here for 3 days. They always come. Today, Israelis raided our village twice. Of course we prevented them, as we will do every day. At the beginning, they used to build the wall and we would follow them. But now it is the opposite. They follow us. That is why we are staying here. They closed the checkpoint and prevented anyone from entering. Days ago, the eastern gates of Jerusalem, Bab al-Shams, it is called that because the sun rises from the east, and this one is Bab al-Karameh. So instead of Israel surrounding us, we will surround them because we are the people with the rights to the land. The one who has the right is the strongest.
Area is agricultural land, you know, and now we are surrounded surrounded with the settlements. And this area, it's in the history, the main road to Jerusalem, and the Israeli settlements cutting this main road and cutting the main road to the Ramallah.
We have come here today to construct Canaan village on our land, our Palestinian land, to practice our right to develop our land, to plant our land, to use our land. This is our natural right as human beings, to use our land. That's why we are here today. When we arrived to the area, Israeli occupation or fascist Israeli occupation forces has attacked us, has demolished the tents, stolen the tents, but we are telling them clear message. They have demolished Canaan village here. We will today, not tomorrow, we will build another village in another area in Yatta, today.
We took the case to the High Court for petition to state that this is privately owned land. We were able to get an order from the High Court to not take the camp down for 6 days. However, the army stormed the camp under the pretext of security and announced it as a military closed zone for this period of time. I was shocked that I was unable to enter my own land.
Now we are living in miserable conditions. Because we are cutting from the other areas from Ramallah and Jerusalem. We haven't any work. Our agricultural, all of our agricultural land now it's behind of the wall.
The Israeli soldiers told us it was a military closed zone until the 13th of February. I was shocked to see that he had a legal warrant from the head of the IDF to extend the matter to the 13th of February. After the end of the 6 days, the Israeli court granted the Israeli forces permission to take the tents down. This was permitted under a false and unreasonable pretext, security. The area is isolated. There are no Israeli highways or military bases. No danger towards Israelis whatsoever. It is open land. I strongly object to this excuse that it is a military zone. This is merely an excuse. This, for example, is a title deed from Turkey that proves that we are the landowners. This deed entitles Salah Ali Jama and all the people of Tor to this land, which includes my family for generations. This title proves that these people are the rightful owners. Only the owners of this land have the rights to it.
Bab al-Shams was completely encircled by the Israeli army. All protesters were evacuated and Palestinians are now banned from the area. Although Mofid gained permission from the High Courts to remain on the land for an additional week, the Israeli police refused this petition and dispersed the protesters without warning or warrant.
2 weeks ago, there was an open day near the wall. We marched towards it and planted olive trees and buried with them the names of martyrs killed by Israel. The soldier attempted to stop us, but we continued digging. The soldiers came, but we did not allow them to destroy our work. We resist. Our work is on the land.
Thank you. النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdaa al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawilluha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders,